Get in that wagon, Tom. Let's head on back to the barn. We've been spreading manure. That's a combination of both news and opinion for 2 hours now. It's Monday. It's your turn to take care of the little chunks that are left over. Hey, by the way, Patrick the horse is sitting right next to you. Say hi to Patrick.
If you're new to the Tom and Curly Show,
it's these little things that, you know, make people look forward to it.
That's right.
Yeah, I like that. All right, here we go. Seattle voters signing a referendum to repeal the jobs tax. I talked to some people, and I will, off the record, I can't tell you who it was.
Okay.
But
by the
up,
way, they're so
way up there.
They're just starting, yes, yeah. Way up there. They're starting to gather signatures. They're going to do this at a bunch of a coalition of employers called No Tax on Jobs began collecting signatures for a referendum.
So they need, what, 17,000 signatures or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I talked to somebody at
18,000 verified signatures.
Okay, got it. They think they'll have no trouble getting this. I talked to somebody high up at a particular corporation on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Ordering a cup of coffee.
Spiked with?
No, just plain old coffee.
Plain old coffee,
bulletproof.
Good.
Bulletproof. I think it had butter in it or something.
Okay.
And I said, so what is X going to do about the $275? He said, we're going to eat it. He said, well, we can afford that. Others can't, but we're going to eat it. He's so he's explaining how that one corporation will just assume the $275.
Good. So noble citizenship on the part of a company.
Well, I think they'll eat it, and then what they're hoping for, he said, quietly, everybody believes they're going to easily be able to get this thing on the ballot, and he says, and he believes that come November, they'll have so much push behind it that people will vote for it. Because the referendum or the sign-up thing is going to be in people's businesses. So it would be like, hey, do you want to pay more for the burgers?
You're
going to pay more for the burger. You'll be paying more for your burger if this head tax or this jobs tax goes through. So they think they're going to be able to collect these signatures at these premises.
Oh, so he sells burgers?
No.
Okay.
We're not trying to guess I'm not trying to guess his thing.
Okay.
What he does. I'm just saying they think they're going to be able to get the 17,000. And the question is, do you believe the people of Seattle will vote yes or no for a jobs tax?
I think it may depend on the campaign. Here is my suggestion, because I think there's been such an uproar, especially from people that don't live in Seattle, I noticed on our air. But still, I'm wondering if maybe some of the steam has been vented by having the compromise. You don't like the word compromise, but the idea is it was set at 500, and Jenny Durkin's office, the mayor, managed to have the request from the city council,
largest head tax in the United States.
Well, yeah, there are not that many head taxes, but we did have a head tax earlier. But the idea is that because they diminished it, they went in half, and they got Amazon in effect to be on board with it, saying, yeah, we will continue construction. You say the construction jobs that might have gotten lost. I don't know if that might have taken some of the steam out of the labor push.
Yeah.
All the building tradespeople are saying, okay, we're okay with this 250 or 275 because our jobs will be saved. I don't know if that will be enough to kind of, ease the outrage, or if it'll just be ramped up. In other words, is it the principle of the head tax that people are against, or is it just the size of the head tax?
I think you'll get a bunch of voters doing, they hate the city council. You'll get that vote. You'll get the people that hate the homeless problem and think that giving them more money is not the way to go. And then you're going to get the people that hate socialism, which is the redistribution of wealth from those that produce to those that do not.
You're talking about Seattle here.
Amazon, we remain very apprehensive about the future created by the council's hostile approach and rhetoric towards larger businesses. This is from Amazon.
Yeah,
and
this
Starbucks
is not new.
Says,
this is what they said last week.
This is what they said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And
okay.
Starbucks says the city continues to spend without reform and fail without accountability. The compromise idea is like the guy in some warehouse with a blindfold on, and you've got somebody like Kevin Spacey with a nail gun or something. Hey, let's cut off his entire hand, or let's slice off two of his fingers. So the compromise is between taking his hand or two of his fingers to mail back to somebody to show that you actually have the hostage. So there was no compromise. The cities, because I can't find anywhere in any reporting where the city sat down with Dick's Burgers, with Amazon, with Starbucks, and with 500 other people and went back and forth. There was no back and forth. So I believe November 7th, you'll vote for a jobs tax because you believe taxing jobs is a good idea. And I think the majority of people in Seattle will vote against it.
Yeah. I don't know how I'll vote. I'll see how the campaign goes. But I do think the compromise works. If you get Amazon and the construction workers that were mainly behind the protests of the head tax getting on board, I can see that that might dissipate some of the anger.
Okay. Aberdeen is thinking of voting. They're actually going to vote this week on an ordinance to prohibit sitting and lying down on sidewalks, and it would be a form of, is this criminalizing homelessness? This has happened before. We'll just take care of real fast. This has been brought up. I think Kirkland looked at this. Issaquah had a similar situation. And often the ACLU comes in and says, you know what? You have a right to be able to sit down if you want. And it's not, you have a right to lay down, as the ACLU will come in there and rest. The city tries to find different ways around it in order to keep people either moving, or you can't lay down here, so they put spikes down, or they just make it generally uncomfortable for you to try to loiter anywhere in public.
Yeah, I mean, this just, I don't know why, what particular came, what particular reason sort of brought this to a head in Aberdeen. We have seen it in other arenas, and now it's at Aberdeen, which is usually seen as one of the most economically depressed, if not the most economically depressed county in the country, in the state.
Yeah, it hurt there in Aberdeen. Good people, but man, they really got short end of the stick with that Spotted Owl nonsense. Hey, by the way, they found out the Spotted Owl was not in danger. Oh, whoops.
Well, good, then. We saved it.
Whoops, yeah.
Good we saved
Wiped out everything else. Good job. Way to go. Grace Harbor really appreciates the work done by Al Gore.
If not for the Spotted Owl, Aberdeen would be booming?
Well, certainly it wouldn't have had the feet cut out from underneath them as they did. Oh, they're not in danger. Sorry about that. Everybody lost their job. Hey, the mystery of the $70 hoodie, if you've spent any time on the internet, to the right side of any search that you do on Google or anywhere else, or Facebook especially, you'll see a very attractive young lady with blonde hair and a red sweatshirt on. And it'll say something like, softest, greatest, most wonderful sweatshirt in the world. And it says Seattle right on there. And everybody is buying this sweatshirt?
For only $70.
I know. You think it must be a good sweatshirt because it's only $70, Tom.
This is a phenomenon that completely escaped me. Uh-huh. It's something called drop shopping. Mm-hmm. And it's a phenomenon that is apparently growing so successfully that maybe it will go away. But what this system is, this particular item we're talking about, this one guy is this Affinity Find, it's called. It's run by this guy who lives in Paulsboro, Washington. So it has a local feel, but there are others around. And what their job is, this is a part of this little-known corner, they say, of the e-commerce world, where you get these small entrepreneurs that they use social media ads and these kind of cool virtual storefronts to sell products that they find on online marketplaces such as Alibaba. Mm-hmm. Alibaba is like the Chinese Amazon.
Yes.
.com. And so what they do is they find something and say, oh, wow, that's a pretty good deal. I'm going to advertise that, and I will buy it from Alibaba and then sell it for a profit over here based on my ads. And they, for instance, this $70 hoodie you can get for $20 if you have the wherewithal to get onto Alibaba, which a lot of us don't. Uh-huh. And so they say basically you're paying like a finder's fee for these people that are shopping this around. Interestingly enough, because the Wall Street Journal is, I don't know, they're, you know, exposing this or blowing it out of the water, but they contact a guy named Jonathan Smith, who's the Affinity Find guy who has that website based in Paulsboro. Mr. Smith declined to comment and asked the Wall Street Journal not to publish his name, citing copycat entrepreneurs. It did not stop Wall Street Journal from printing his name and putting that information there. And he says the reason he didn't want his name published is he did not want copycat entrepreneurs. The problem is that once people figure out, hey, that's an easy way to make a buck.
Right.
I'm going to go there and I'm going to sell it, you know, at markup price because people won't go there. You need to find, and it is a skill, you need to find something that most people won't have access to and say, hey, I can get that. I know a guy who knows a guy who I can get that for you for a price, and that's what they're doing. The whole system is called a drop shopping.
Right.
And it's kind of an expose, but it also, they have a guy saying, there's nothing illegal about it. It's just guys using his own entrepreneurial spirit to try to track things down. But it's now become such a model that they are teaching classes on how to do it.
That's right.
And because of that, they say that now so many people are doing it that margins are going to start dropping and they're not going to be able to make the profit they once did.
You can watch How to Do It on YouTube. A 28-year-old tells
right?
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing called a Shopify courses for $1,000. Says that a video, you can generate hundreds of thousands of dollars in a month in sales from Shopify. Drop shipping is a beautiful business model.
Right. Yeah, that's that guy is cited in this article, too. I think it's fascinating that these kinds of things crop up, and now that people are sort of hip to that, they may just go to Alibaba themselves.
And get themselves I think it's the coziest sweatshirt in the world, Tom.
Is that right?
The fact that there is a labor shortage doesn't come as a shock to anybody as you've tried to hire someone to do any kind of work for you around the house.
Yeah.
There's plumbers are in high demand, as well as framers, carpenters, anybody working with electrical as well. The jobs are out there, and they're getting paid a tremendous amount of money because there's just not enough of them in the trades fields.
Well, you know, it's not tremendous amount. It's a decent living, but it's not a tremendous amount of money. And I think maybe if this continues, that will become a tremendous amount of money. For instance, the median annual age for electricians, a wage for electricians is $52,720. So you're not going to become rich as Midas that way, but that's the median annual age. The top 10% top 10%, they can earn $90,000.
Mm-hmm.
The median annual rate wage for carpenters is $43,600. Highest 10% can earn $80,000.
Is this across the country or here?
So
those numbers have got to be across the country. They got it.
Yeah, this is U.S. Yeah, the U.S. talent shortage survey.
Forget about it.
Okay. So, because here they'll make a lot more.
Oh.
Yeah, well, you would think. I thought those would seem kind of low. But the idea is why is there a problem? The problem is, they said, well, first off, the initial thing was the recession. The recession in 2008 killed the construction industry because there were no more. I mean, we're living in boomtown, John, but across the country, construction, the building just collapsed. Construction building trade just collapsed. So all the people that might have been in that field left the field.
Right. They all washed out.
It's now taken like 10 years for it to start getting back to normal. And so you have that. You also have a lot of people that feel like they don't want to do blue-collar jobs. It's no longer considered prestigious that now that what you want to do is you want to have a tech job and or a STEM job. And it's true, you can make more money, but they say the problem with the job, the way they see it, is there's not much room for advancement.
Mm-hmm.
That in other fields, you can go sort of climb up, if not the corporate ladder, but climb up a ladder. They say in this case, you basically, after you go through your apprenticeship, you don't make that much more money as you continue deeper and deeper. And they say there's a whole range of people that are like my age in these fields that are ready to retire.
Mm-hmm.
But the younger people, they've done away with, like woodworking and shop, I guess, in high school. So people just aren't as trained to do that. And it doesn't have the kind of
cachet.
That's the word.
But
yeah,
that's not fair because someone does the work. And with society is telling somebody who's 16 years old that if you work with your hands, then therefore you're not as good as somebody who works at a computer.
That's what they're suggesting, that right now we're pushing. Right now, it is true. We've done lots of stories. Where are they pushing people? What fields do they go into? STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math.
That.
No, I know. That's what I understand is why there isn't a bigger market for this, because we've often said that college now is not worth the effort, and you can get a good-paying job doing this kind of work, but most people don't want to do this kind of work. Here's what's going to change. If suddenly, if that median wage for an electrician is $52,000 nationwide, if it becomes $100,000, that's the median, I think you'll get more people going into those fields. But it is interesting. It's hard to find people to do home repairs or, any kind of construction work because there are just not very many of them.
There was a book that came out a couple years ago. I was just trying to find it. I think it was You Can't Outsource My Hammer. And the guy was in the science technology business.
Yeah.
And then he learned along the way because his father had taught him how to frame a house.
Yeah.
And he was a carpenter. Then he became a skilled carpenter who would be hired on different jobs. And he realized, my skill and the better I get at it, there'll always be work for me. Because his job had been replaced by somebody in India. So he says, you can't outsource my hammer. The idea that somebody works with their hands is somehow looked down upon. I think that's terrible that it's not being encouraged. But if I were a skilled laborer, I wouldn't necessarily encourage anybody to get into it because ultimately, in the end, I make more money. Because if I can convince 40 additional people to come on, well, there's 40 people I'm competing against. A friend of mine I talked to on Friday told me, he said, in the last year, he has given his employees a $20 raise. $20 raise on top of the 50-some bucks that they were already making.
You mean an hour?
Yes.
Yeah,
because he's in the concrete business.
An hour.
A concrete business is like nuts.
Yeah.
So my competition, as he told me, is constantly trying to pick off my guys by offering them $5 more, $7 more.
Yeah.
He goes, it's to the point where you can't keep up.
Yeah.
And you have to have enough money built right in there so that you can keep your guys. Because sometimes they'll get picked off on a Friday, don't come into work on Monday because somebody else has offered them more money.
So I guess the question then is, since they're clearly good jobs and good money to be made, is it just an opinion, a societal opinion, that it doesn't matter that that you're looked down upon? Because I would think that if you make the kind of money, you know, you can command
but,
some
respect. But are you? Yes, you're a $130,000 plumber.
Yeah,
but you're a plumber.
Yeah,
is that bad?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
When the plumber drives away in a nicer car than what you have. You're like, yeah, okay. Yeah, he makes 130, but he's got to put his hand in a big, gross toilet. My friend Rocky, who's a plumber who works on his own, he's rolling in it.
Yeah.
Not money. He's rolling in the other stuff, but he hopes to eventually make some money. Society looks down upon the worker. The guy that is hip and cool and has a top knot is much cooler than the guy
that this is the result of the push toward technology, because we keep hearing about, you know, computers and robots are going to take over the world and any kind of manual labor can be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Not any skilled labor fields, doesn't sound like, at least not for a goodly while.
All righty, let's do this. Want to do the Mariners ticket giveaway right now? All right, here we go. The Mariners are taking on Tampa. They're taking on. Let me see who they're taking on. There it is, right
Some
down there.
Some baseball team.
Whoever writes this, who writes this? This is so poorly set up for it. Look at this. Look at all that nonsense. I'm just trying to get to where it is. Also, I should probably read it ahead of time. Where's the date? No date. Let's give them away right now. 1-888-973-5476. Six Mariners are taking on the Minnesota Twins. You stay after the game and watch the screening of The Sandlot on Mariners Vision Time. 25th anniversary of the movie. Find tickets today at Mariners.com. And don't forget, you can hear the entire Minnesota series on 710 ESPN. You can call right now to get those tickets. 1-888-973-5476. And the game is Sunday. There we go.
Sunday.
There you are.
It was like an Easter egg. She has to find it first.
I'm going to put this stuff together. 1-888-973-5476. Get your tickets to the Mariners. Right back. Here we go, 1134. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. One of you gets a chance to be letter of the day, whether you want it or not. You'll have the final word of the show just before the long-deceased John McLaughlin says, bye-bye. All right. The Amish. I have having lived in Lancaster County, Tom. Not Lancaster. Lancaster. The Amish were ever present. We would see them on the sides of roads with their buggies. You'd see them at the stores. You'd see them wherever you was. My neighbor was Amish, not too far away across the field from this little crappy apartment that I rented.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't really talk to them very much. They didn't talk to you very much. You nodded to them as they went by or gave them a wide berth as they go by in their buggy. This is an interesting piece that takes the Amish living in today's modern society and says, what pieces of technology do the Amish decide to adopt and not adopt in order to keep their community strong?
First of all, this was eye-opening to me. I assumed that the Amish did not adopt technology, period. But that's not the case. Each community of Amish are allowed to vote on which technologies they allow for and which they reject. There are only two fundamental causes. They say that if they decided to embrace a particular kind of technology, they would no longer considered Amish, and that's the television and the automobile.
Now, why don't they like the television?
It's a one-way conduit for somebody else to come into you, but you have no contact back with them.
Right. They come into your living room, but you can't communicate with them.
Even more bizarrely, John, this may not be the direction we want to go, but I just finished reading about the one of the things about the car
yeah.
that is seen as debilitating, it's like, what do you have against the car? You take a buggy someplace, why can't you take the car? They say that cars facilitate, yes, in our mind, freedom, we can get away. But their suggestion here in this article is it added to the ease and ability of premarital sex.
Right, because you could get in the car
and drive away from your parents, from the overseers of your morality, and they indicate that they think the sexual revolution of the 60s came about because of the prevalence of the car in the 50s.
So
what
you'd have a wagon with a horse, and you would you'd say to your girlfriend, whatever her name is, some Amish name, Laura Leah,
okay.
going into the back of the wagon. Now, the horse would have to stop. Got to tie the horse up. Then the wagon starts rocking, and the horse then leaves, and you get some problems.
Yeah.
They also said the car was not good because it broke down society and allow you to pass by your neighbor. You weren't having as much conversation. It was anything to weaken society.
No, that's right. And so they have this very, it may seem kind of like highfalutin, this kind of philosophy of life, but it really is just much more basic. They like one-to-one contact. They like community. And anything that challenges the community cohesiveness, they see as a threat. So what this article is talking about is, so how do they determine if they agree? For instance, somebody was saying, I'm tired of using my axe. I want to get a chainsaw. They might say, okay, a chainsaw does the job, but it doesn't interfere with the way you interact with your neighbors. And also maybe that could be allowed, even though it is a technology. But what the philosophical thrust of this is, we get we are so in love in technology, especially Americans, but, you know, the entire Western civilization. When the smartphone first came out, everybody wanted to get the smartphone, and it dropped because of that. The price it dropped, and everybody now has a smartphone.
Yes,
it didn't occur to us to say, "Wait a minute,
what's going to happen to us?
Is this a good thing? How is this technology going to impact us?" And they said that's what the Amish do, and so the Amish wait. So when you have the first iPhone came out, for instance, they could say, "Okay, how is that going to affect us?"
By the way, I've seen pictures of the first iPhone. The line, people waiting, not one Amish. Not one Amish waiting in line out in front of that store. Not one.
That's right.
Right.
They still probably don't have iPhones. But the idea is that right now we are aware. You often talk about how your kids are so technologically tied that it's disturbing that you can't go to a restaurant, you can have a family meal without them being on their phone and everything else. That we rush to adopt as not even as early adopters. We rush to adopt and worry about the consequences later. The Amish instead sit back. They look at all of us. You know, running around, kind of, oh, look at what's happening there. Look at what's happening with the, you know, they're tied to social media. That's not a good thing. I voted down, and they voted down, and that's how they keep their community. Now, there are only 200,000 of them, so I don't know how long, they'll be able to survive. But still, they wait for the impact of technology before they decide whether technology is something they want to adopt.
So the unintended consequences of any piece of technology. So the first iTunes or the first iPod, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember my dad turned to my brother in 1995 and said, I think it was 95, what is that? Chuck goes, oh, this lets me have all my songs.
Yes.
I got all my songs on here, Dad. What do you pay? I pay a buck. So no longer do you have the folding down visor in the car that was full of CDs or the tray that had cassette players and cassette tracks and stuff like that.
Yeah,
all of a sudden, there it all was.
Yeah.
And then it went from, isn't that convenient? So we want to do more, make more money off you. So not just be able to take the phones, then you can watch movies and start to download a bunch of other stuff on it.
Yeah.
So now it became device that you're giving the razors, you sell them the blades. Apple realized, hey, we can save you time, save you money, and be able to give you all of this leisure at a drop of a button and a very small amount of money. Nobody really saw that all of a sudden it would lead to isolation.
Yes.
And it would be less and less people would be communicating directly one-on-one. I saw an interesting study, which is counterintuitive, that the kids that spend no time on social media actually have higher rates of depression.
Is that right?
Yes.
That is counterintuitive, unless the problem is they have higher rates of depression because they cannot relate to any of their fellow classmates because they're all on and they're not.
They break it down. High school seniors who are more likely to be unhappy are those who don't use social media at all. And then they broke down another study, those that spend 10 hours a week and those that spend less than 10 hours a week on social media. And they find that as far as unhappiness and happiness, they're almost identical. You can't tell the difference between the two. I mean, that's just this one study. Now, ultimately, what happens 10 years from now? Brock walked by our desk and he was lamenting the fact that his kids had the phone. What will this generation be like? What's the one positive aspect that you can see from people being disconnected from each other but connected to the things that they want instantaneously? What's one positive thing?
Okay, now hear what I would say. My kids are much more connected to the world outside of their little hometown or even their country because of that. Okay. So I do think social media has goods and they have good things and bad things about it. And you have to mitigate that as just about with everything in moderation. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that my kids can go on the internet and find out about something. We used to have those bulky encyclopedias.
Yeah.
Hey, you got to find out about Yemen. Where's Yemen? You got to go to the Y's. You look it up. Now you can get at your fingertips. You can find out a lot more information that used to take you a long time.
But the thing that's supposed to connect us is actually disconnecting us. I talked to a bartender yesterday. He's been a bartender for 7 years.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, so what have you noticed changing in the last 7 years? He said, no one talks at the bars. You're sitting at the bar. So he's the bartender.
Yeah.
He goes, it used to be one guy would sit down and then he'd sit next to a couple of girls and then talk. He said, everyone sitting at the bar
with their phone
is on their phone.
Yeah.
They're either swiping right or swiping left.
Yeah.
Or talking or texting somebody else. But there's no conversation because you don't need to try to pick up anybody at the bar. Why should you when you have thousands and thousands of possibilities right there in front of you?
I think that's definitely true. I do think, though, it allows you, for instance, I have friends across the country that I keep in touch with that I wouldn't normally keep in touch with because we have text messages and those kinds of things. So it does ease communication in some ways.
You've never texted me. You've never texted me. And you're texting your friends across the country?
Yes. Wow. That hurts. Mark the time, Andrew.
11:43.
What happened? What happened 11:43?
Tom revealed that he doesn't text you, but he texts his friends across the country.
Boom. That's because I don't spend 8 hours a day with them.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? It's the little things, Tom.
Yeah,
we'll come right back. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. Take Tom to task at 98973.
Or text John. He's lonely.
I joined a men's group for $1,200. And every time I tell people that, they're like, that sounds weird.
Right.
I'm going to come up with a different term than men's group.
We're a social group of sorts.
Doug Limbaugh Mazda. Thanks, Doug Limbaugh Mazda, for helping us out with the Tom and Curly Show, for sponsoring it, and also giving the mailman a Mazda. He gets a different Mazda every week, Tom.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what do you mean by different? A different color?
A different, you know, different make.
Really?
They've got all sorts down there.
Yeah.
But and the one thing we've asked the mailman, can you please, he has like a lot of styrofoam cups in there, and can you please get the cups out? That's the one thing we asked for, is make the turnover. All right, here comes the mailman now.
Hit it. I'm the mailman, as you can see, I'm the mailman, don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman, if you didn't know, I'm the mailman, I bring the mail to your door.
Yes.
Tom?
I love my body, and I get a lot of pleasure out of my body.
Right. Hello, teeny tiny lady. Thanks for saving us. She's in a pickle jar, she is, and we'll get to the letter of the day in just a moment, but let's get started now.
Well, we started off our story with that fascinating and horrifying mountain lion attack.
Yes.
And we got a bunch of messages. These are just a few, a reflection of the general tenor. 253, did I hear the reporter correctly? In that short clip, he called the cougar a panther, a puma, a mountain lion, a big cat, and finally, a cougar. And the thing I read said that the cougar and a mountain lion and a puma were all the same thing.
He did throw them all in there, didn't he?
Yes.
And all he didn't call his mittens. Mittens the cougar. Let's see. Wait. Why are we killing wild animals for being wild animals? That's a risk you take hiking / camping. You shouldn't kill the animal for protecting its home / family. They say the behavior, it was so outside the norm that the animal must have had something wrong with it in order for it to act that way. So that's why they killed the animal.
They definitely are checking it.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, the San Diego Zoo says, they're all that mammal has more names than just about anything else. But no matter what you call it, it's still the same cat. Mm-hmm. Larry in West Seattle says, John's getting his cougar and bear defenses scrambled.
Oh, darn it.
You don't roll up into a human meatball for a cougar attack.
No.
You make yourself large and in charge. If attacked, fight back and yell. Now, a bear attack, that's when you curl up, cover, and play dead. However, the best tactic comes from the wisdom of the good old mountain man. Never hunt with guys that can run faster than you.
All righty. Jason in 360 says, speaking of good stories, my baby was born last night. Healthy baby Jason Jr., 7 pounds, 4 ounces, 9.5 inches long. Wow.
19.
Oh, 19. I was going to say nine. Pretty small. Sorry, Jason. Yeah. I truncated your kid there.
Yeah, that's right.
Excellent.
Here, you could have recorded that birth announcement. Instead, you give him half
ten inches off the kid. You know, wow. He could get a job here. Yes, like a teeny tiny lady to pickle jar.
Congratulations!
Yes, ready to go, Jason.
We've got your own pickle jar just waiting for you.
All right.
Congratulations to both Jasons.
Yes, yes.
Why was John insinuating there's something wrong with Tacoma? 206. We here in Tacoma love Tom so much we are renaming the city Tomcoma.
I love that. No, that's not fair. 206. Why, if you're from Tacoma, do you have a 206 area code? 253. Is your concrete friend hiring? I don't know.
Yeah. Because you told a good story.
He got a lot of money.
206, I'm a journeyman here in Seattle in the building trades, and I'm making over $100K a year. Best job I could ever ask for, and that's with a GED education.
Hey, guys, I'm a 23-year-old guy, high school educated, worked my way up to being the head foreman of a landscaping company. We have my own home for almost a year and a decent amount of land. Tech workers may look down on us who work with their hands, but as I look at them with their apartments and college debt with more pity than they look down on with me.
Yeah. 253, journeyman electricians for local Union 46 in Seattle. Earn $51 per hour plus benefits.
Mm-hmm.
$50,000 mean is first year apprentice average.
Yes, and 206, Tom, unless your union fire sprinkler fitters for a commercial journeyman are at $48.50, sheet metal and plumbers unions, even more than that.
Yeah, sounds good. On the idea of returning $52,000 that was found in a safe, Joe in Tacoma, returning lost or stolen property to the rightful owner is the right thing to do. Rewarding those who return your stuff is also the right thing to do. Earning good karma is nice, but good karma plus 2% of the take is even better.
I wonder how you would ask for it. Would it, like, as you hand the thing over, like the bellman that takes your bags and brings it up to your room, and then just stand there and point out a bunch of stuff till finally, like, okay.
What do I do?
Okay, and you've got both hot and cold running water, and there's two robes in here. You're like, okay.
Yeah, enough already.
I got it already. And one of the guys like, so we got some 20s
and
in here.
And now it is time for the letter sort of stinky of the day.
Oh, you have to give up so many good letters to get to the letter of the day. About the $52,000 again we were just talking about.
Good.
That segment about the guy who gave back all that loot provided the best quote of the day. The Good Samaritan's reward? They returned the safe and got mentioned on the Tom and Curly Show.
Yes.
I know in everything I do, I aim for this exact life goal. It's a true pinnacle of adult achievement. Really, right up there with summiting Everest, winning a Nobel Prize, or building a company successful enough to be targeted for a new tax by the Seattle City Council. From Wes in Puyallup, Dilly Dilly.
I'm going to miss him. He's moving away, remember?
Yeah, but not for 5 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we got a lot of lead time.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'll save the tears.
Thanks, Wes. Bye-bye.
Out of time. Bye-bye.